Welcome back to the Life on Target podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Spearing, bringing you an interview today with author, pastor, husband, father, landowner, Mr. Daniel Grothy. His most recent book, The Power of Place, Choosing Stability in a Rootless Age, has been one of the most impactful books I've read in the last year. Convicting, practical. And in this interview, Mr. Grothy shares a lot more personal practices that he uses, how he carves out his time for his wife and his kids and his community, how they're serving the families that live on the same tract of land with them, how they're using that land to serve the church and the community, and gives a call for Christians where they are to put down roots and serve those around you. Enjoy the interview. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat. I think I mentioned I'm really interested kind of the workings of how y'all got to your commune, if you will. Yeah. And the working where the vision for that came from a selfish perspective, but I'm also kind of advocating for like-minded people to try to locate themselves close geographically. Sure. Been following you on Instagram for a while, seeing the daily rhythms of you and your wife going for a walk, and checking the land. And trying to emulate that. So
that's awesome.
I'd love to, I think there's also probably a lot of stuff that the men that listen to this podcast could get from kind of having that grass is greener, your story of kind of getting excited about that. So I guess it's kind of broad brushstrokes of where I'd like to kind of generally point. And then see what the Lord does through the conversation and our kind of the core of the guys and the families that listen. I'm kind of advocating agency, taking kind of hold of the vision that the Lord's given you, executing it boldly, being confident that Lord has given you something specific to do. And it's not necessarily going to be one of those things that's always easy to do, that the odds are in your favor necessarily, but that you need to do it. And as the Lord shakes many things in our way of life, being closer to the land is often better. So and I know you read a lot of the same people that either I or my wife enjoy reading, and the my wife has had Annie Dillard on her chair next to her at the fire pit underneath the barn. So
I knew I liked you guys.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, my brand guy too is a big Annie Dillard fan as well. So as he's editing this audio, giving him a shout out as well. So
that's bad lighting. Whoa. I'm glad to hear you've got people around you reading good things. And I love seeing what you're up to and all the different ways you can contribute in the world. That's a really cool thing that you're teaching your kids and calling other men to.
Amen. So yeah, maybe just start out with how you met your wife, kind of the personal journey to where you are and the place the Lord has you now.
Yeah. So we've been married 17 years. I'm a Tulsa, Oklahoma boy. She's from Chicago. Her dad worked at Sears for 30 years. And she has two older brothers. And one brother went away to college, played basketball, and then moved to Tulsa because he fell in love with a Tulsa girl. So he started coaching and teaching at my high school. So I was 14. It was my first day of freshman year, and he was 24. And I walked into the gym, and I saw this young new coach, like athlete. He's dunking. Like, okay. So I go up and introduce myself to him. We become fast friends and have 4 years together. Him coaching me, we win the state championship in Oklahoma, and just a great time. So I finished high school, went across the street to Oral Roberts University, started playing basketball there. And I would go next door. My high school is literally next door. So I would go over and see my old friend Ryan. And one day I went over and he said, "Hey, I want to introduce you to my sister." I'm like, "Ryan, I've known you for 6 years and I didn't know you had a sister." And meanwhile, he'd been telling her about me, some former player I want you to meet. You know, he's like, "You don't have to marry him. I just want you to meet him." So Lisa said he had never, ever done that. He was the brother who would show up with the shotgun, you know, at the front door for prom night and you know, try to scare away guys and, you know, punk them. So she's like, either Ryan, her brother, is joking and is, you know, playing around, or this guy must be something decent, you know, because he wouldn't do it. So we met.
At least a good athlete. I mean,
at least a decent athlete, you know. So we met and it was just game on at that point. Lisa graduated college and moved to Tulsa, and it was a great woman.
Okay, leaving the city behind.
Yeah, she played 4 years of college volleyball. I played basketball. We loved to just be athletic and move and get outside and work and sweat and compete and set goals. And she has only brothers and I have only sisters. And so when I met her, I was like, I know what to do. Like, I get this girl, you know, I have three sisters who got me ready for this moment. So that's how we met and fell in love.
Nice. So that was what year of college was that? You said,
My sophomore year, her senior year. And we got married in 2005. So, yeah,
that's awesome. And you, were you at that point, ministry bound,
At that point, I was really pointing my life in that direction. Yeah, I was finishing up school. So she's 2 years ahead of me. So I was finishing my theology degree, undergrad, and got recruited out to Colorado Springs, where I live now. I've been here since we got married. Pastor from a large church out here reached out and said, "Hey, I got to know him." He said, "I know you have 2 years of school left, but if when you're done, you feel like the Lord's calling you here, you've got a job." So
nice.
We were thinking about Colorado Springs, and then we got engaged my senior year, and they flew us out here that next week, and we prayed about it, and we got married in July and moved out here to Colorado Springs 12 days later to start working at the church.
I think that was a pretty relatable moment in the book for me. Because my wife and I moved into a really small apartment right away. And just how you're talking about, just a wife just starts making things beautiful, you know?
Yes.
And just goes to work with aspects about, I had been in the apartment a little while. We got married when I was in the Army and she moved up there and I had literally not even noticed the wallpaper, you know? And she's like, this is disgusting. We got to cover this up. You know, I'm like, huh? I don't even notice that, you know? But that was, I mean, and then you guys were geographically isolated at that point too, correct? From most of your relationships. So
we left all our family and it was just the two of us. And it was the best thing that could have happened looking back. I mean, we weren't trying to leave. We weren't trying to get away from our families. My parents have been married 45 years. Her parents, 53 years. Like they're legends, all four of them. But we felt the Lord calling us out here and then doing it and then looking back going, yeah, that was a great time for us to become one, to really, you know, when the tires got bald and we didn't have any money, I couldn't go home and kind of cry to my parents and then bail me out. We had to figure it out. We had to budget, we had to make it happen. And so, yeah, the time together, learning each other was a great gift.
Yep. And then kids came along pretty quick. I guess doing the math and then just talk me through, get me from the apartment, there and kind of the trajectory from there to the farm now.
Yeah. So we lived in the apartment 1 year. We had said, you know, let's wait 2 years and then we'll start talking about kids. And a year into marriage, we said, we can't wait to have a baby. Let's go.
Yeah.
And 9 months later, by the grace of God, we were holding Lillian. We took that home. The market had crashed. And I was wanting to do, I mean, this is 06, 07, global economic tank.
Yeah.
You know. So we were upside down in the house, but it's okay if you're playing the long game. Meanwhile, I had a guy call me and say, hey, I'm in the military, a friend. And he said, I've got to go to Afghanistan for a year and I own my house cash. Would you guys want to live in it for free?
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. I'd been wanting to do seminary, but I told the Lord, if I'm doing seminary, I'm doing it debt free. I'm not taking out a loan. I got a full ride for my undergrad. No one's making me do this. So if we're going to do this, Lord, you have to provide. Mm-hmm. So I call the guy back that night and I go, well, we'll see if we can rent our house out and we'll come into your house. Mm-hmm. So I put it up on Craigslist. The next morning, a guy called me. He walked into our house and said, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. So he moves into our house and makes it a rental. We move into Samuel's house for free. Meanwhile, Samuel extended his contract. So we had a little over 2 years living for free and in a great home. And I was able to go to seminary and do it debt free. And we were able to save up a little nest egg. And then we moved over to another part of town when Samuel came back from Afghanistan, bought a house. And during that time, my sister and brother-in-law and their four kids, they moved to the Springs. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law is this cowboy. I mean, he's one of those guys like you. He can do anything with his hands. He's got every tool. What he doesn't know, he can learn. Mm-hmm. And he's gritty. He's the hardest working man I know. And he had said to us, hey, we're going to buy 40 acres and we'll give you 5 acres. Just come build a house with us and let's raise our kids together. And so we explored it, made an offer, looked like it was going to go through. And at the last second, someone came in with cash and $100,000 over asking and bought the land out from under us.
Been so there. Heartbroken.
Shoot, you've been there. You've been there. We were kicked in the stomach and like, shoot. So we
probably just already assumed, walked that land too and just
yes,
heart, started picturing heart, your heart's everything. Going.
Dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we settled back in and we thought, well, I guess it's not going to work. And then 5 years ago, my brother-in-law called and my wife Lisa is a real estate broker. And he said, I want you to get us a showing at this old ranch. So it was a family that owned 920 acres. They bought it in the Great Depression. The ranch went belly up and the bank came to this hired hand on the ranch and said, hey, if you can get some cash together, we'll entertain an offer, but we got to get rid of this land. So this guy, Mr. McCune, found some cash and called the bank and they said, you can have the land, 920 acres. So he worked it. He had two sons who worked it. He was 102 when he died working the land.
Wow.
He had two sons who were 97 and 98. And we bought the 120-acre homestead from George McCune, 98 years old, 4 months before he passed.
That is incredible. And
so my wife broke it up 40-40-40, three families on 40 acres. There's a creek that runs through year-round. There's a resident elk herd. We're running cattle out there. We've got 6 horses. My brother-in-law does. Chickens, goats. Big pig, lots of pigs, hog farmers. And we've been breeding dogs out there. My daughter wanted to breed dogs. So we've been out there. We bought the land 5 years ago. We built. So we've been out there 4 years. And there are two or three times a year where all three families go in on a big project.
Okay.
Okay. We had to hang 2 square miles of new fencing. And that is a lot of work. But when you got 11 kids and 6 adults and everyone's busting their butts, we took a whole weekend twice. And in 2 full weekends, we were able to hang 2 miles of fencing. That's awesome. Everyone's chipping in. Everyone's falling in bed tired. Everyone's fingers are cut up with barbed wire. But we have something to show for it. And it was really rewarding. So all three families do a couple of big projects and then each family does their own kind of tailor-made projects during the year.
So how'd you decide the cut for the other 20? So you got brother-in-law or sister, brother-in-law and 4 kids and then a third family.
Yeah.
Did you have a tryout selection? Everybody who could do the most push-ups kind of thing?
Well, you're right. You have to decide who do we want to try to live with and shared values and kids that are under control and respectful. And I mean, you get picky about these things. Yep. you got to know it's a crap shoot, but you have to do your best to try to have a calculated guess. So this other family that lives on the ranch with us, we found out later he had been looking at the ranch
to buy it.
And we got in line first. And then we called him. We were getting ready to write up the offer. And we said, would you guys want to go in? He goes, are you serious? I've been eyeing that piece of property forever. We had owned a business with them. My wife and his wife owned a business. So we knew how to talk money. We knew how to say, hey, when you said that, that bothered me. Please don't do that again. We knew how to repent to each other and do the relational dance. Their kids love our kids and vice versa. So it was brilliant. And we, before we bought it though, I said to them, I'm a pastor and they come to our church. And I said, look, the end game for me is not having land together and not, you know, getting equity or whatever. The end game for me is being able to walk through the communion line and me serve you the body and the blood of our Lord Jesus Christ and look you in the eyes and say, the body of Christ broken for you, the blood of Christ shed for you. And if we don't think we can do that by sharing land together, let's not share land together. Because I want to be able to look you in the eyes in the communion line and be clean and be a brother in Christ and not have something between us. So that was kind of a defining moment conversation for us. And then we also said, what's the end game? If one of us has to get out, how will we make sure that the other two families are okay with who's coming in? And so we had to kind of put a document together. We'll give the other the first right of refusal. We'll consult with the other. But ultimately, we're not going to invite out strangers that have a different way of being. We're going to try to keep it within a community of like-mindedness.
Yeah, no, that's my dad always, you know, said it's like, it's easy in business or whatever to be like, oh, we're friends. He's like, you sit down at the table and you write something up, imagining that you don't like each other at all.
They're the worst.
And then you make, then you stay friends because put a contract, you've made something tangible that spells out how this works, and you keep everybody honest, and it's there's this tendency to not do that when they're friends or whatever, but you kind of solidify things and keep things. My dad went into business with some friends, and the big thing too he talked about is, how do you exit? You got to think about it. Somebody decides they don't want to do it, they got to get out. So it's all really good stuff. And so they have four kids as well. Awesome.
And they're running around together this morning. It's a day off of school today for whatever reason. And 6 a.m., the boys are outside. There's four boys on the ranch. We have two of them. The other two families have one each.
Yeah.
They're out shooting hoops, running and gunning. They're in the creek. They've been together all day. And our rule with our kids, I wrote this up in the book, is we want our kids putting their hands in the dirt and staying busy and active and not, you know, we have screens. We're going to watch basketball and, you know, have times to settle down and watch a show. That's fine. But we're not keeping them in front of screens. And we say, God has given you this ground. Go play. But the rule is, you got to come in hungry, you got to come in dirty, and you got to come in tired. So earn your dinner, earn your sleep, or earn your shower, and earn your sleep.
That's
and
awesome.
Most days that's happening.
And then what's the how do you guys handle farm chores and stuff? Even early on, you know, we're doing it by ourselves. We kind of have a phased purchase that we're working through. And phase three is going to be where we bring people in, Lord willing, the vision for it. But even now, I'm kind of like, man, this would be kind of nice to have some other people come over here and water these chickens a couple nights, you know, or whatever.
Absolutely. So like I said, each family has their own kind of tailor-made projects that they want to do. So for us, Wakely is the chicken guy. And he's out collecting eggs and watering chickens and feeding. Wilson is doing, he's working outside with the cats and with the dogs. And our daughter Lillian is helping with the dogs. We have a bunch of dogs, and she breeds mini golden doodles and has had and sold 16 puppies this last 12 months. And so she's working on that stuff, and Wilson's helping, and Wakely's out, and Wakely gets the money from the eggs. And so he's got a little bit more work to do on a regular basis. And sometimes that bothers him, but it also, you know, he's the one that gets the money.
Yeah.
So
how's he do his, how's he distribute? I'm asking this for my 9 year old's got 24 layers that are about to start. And, and I'm talking to him about the distribution and making sure that he can meet orders and stuff. But what's the, how does he?
Yeah. Well, mom and dad, we help him with that. So when we go up to church during the week, inevitably someone will say, hey, bring me 24 or bring me 48 or whatever. So we'll help pack them. He'll help us clean them, and we'll put them in the cartons, and we'll take them up to church. And then the cash comes in, and we put it in his wallet, and he's happy. So he doesn't have to be the marketing guru. We do have some people, neighbors, and occasionally they'll call us. They're not a weekly order, but they'll call us. And my daughter Lillian has saddled up a horse and ridden over and delivered 5 dozen eggs to the neighbor next door. Nice. So we will send them over, you know, these, and I say the neighbor next door, like it's a half mile away. And these people are on 10 acres or 20 acres or whatever, but we encourage the kids to go over and see if they can help, or, hey, can we shovel your snow, or can we help clean up and get ready for spring? What do you need? We'll work for whatever you think it's worth, and we'll work hard. And so, I don't know. To me, it's just getting your kids in the way of hard work, getting your kids in the way of communicating with adults, eye contact, yes, sir, no, ma'am, shaking hands firmly, understanding money. And like what I love about living on the ranch is our kids know how life works. My son bought a pig, and we put the sow in with the boar, and it was Wilson runs home one day and he goes, my pig, she's in heat. She's like standing heat. She's like really hot. And you know, he's 10 years old at the time. He doesn't know how to use the language, but I know it's working. She's ready to go. And then he runs back over to the pen, and then he runs back over a couple hours later. She's pregnant. She's pregnant. I know she's pregnant. And I said, well, how do you know she's pregnant? He said, I saw him get up there and I saw the foam come out. And I was like, dude, whoa. But honestly, there's not anything that some punk boy in a locker room is going to say that's going to knock my kid off his spot, because he knows how life works.
Oh yeah.
He also knows that they know about death.
Yeah.
You live out on the land and coyotes come in and eat the chickens, or your piglet that you were so hoping would make it doesn't make it, or the cow. We just had to put a cow down last week that, you know, got a infection out of nowhere. And so it helps broach conversations for your kids, and also their understanding of the value of a dollar and how to make money, how to see, like, we want our kids to see a project, to dream it up, to crunch the numbers. How much would it cost me to buy a pig? And then if she has a litter, how much might I be able to make? And and our kids have been able to do this for the last 4 years, and it's deeply satisfying.
Have you found that they've been pretty accurate with their predictions, or have there had to be opportunities where they're saying, you get a little bit rosy colored glasses on that one, didn't you?
Yes, we have had a couple of those projects. The trick is to minimize losses. So like we want our kids on the land to practice and fail safely. So that when they go out, when the stakes are high, they don't fail. And so, you know, you can't always make sure that doesn't happen, but you want them to have that sting of, shoot, I put 75 into this thing and I spent another 75 and I only made 120. I'm down $30. Like, dang it, it didn't work. But on the whole, they've mostly really worked. And our kids, with the first litter, with the first litter of puppies, we took them out to what I called the puppy payout party. And this was during COVID, and there was PPP loan and all this. And I said, I want to have a puppy payout party for the kids. They worked really hard and they're going to have something to show for it. So we took them to a nice restaurant and I got cash. Lisa said, we can write him a check or just transfer it. I said, no, I want cash. I went to the bank and got these stacks of cash.
Yep.
And I gave Wakely $1,000. He was 8 years old, $100 bills. And he puts it out on the table and he's going, oh my gosh, I have $1,000. And yeah. Wilson, he was 10 years old at the time and $1,000. And Lillian, she made $8,000. Wow. And she was 12 years old at the time, 13 years old maybe. And my boys were hugging their sister and, oh my gosh, you have $8,000. That's crazy. Yeah. And I said, Lillian,
and
you
a
have
steak.
More. And a steak. Exactly. I said, you, Lillian, at 13 years old, you have more money than I had when I married your mom. And good job. You saw the opportunity. You invested in your puppies and it worked. So get your kids in spots like you all listening on this podcast. You can contextualize and tailor make. It's not going to be like our story. But the point is, you talk a lot about this, Nathan, in your podcast, agency. Like our children need to know they have agency. They have skills. They can use their imagination. They can work hard. They can see a process to the finish line and then go sit down at a nice meal and go, it worked.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, there's so many opportunities to do that. And in order to make that work too, they got to see dad working all the time too. Because that's, I guess, one of the things that I'm really coming to realization is this farm thing is not something that I touch every other day, every 3 days I get down there, I gotta block out time every morning, every evening, checking. I mean, and we don't even have that big of an operation going, but just the amount of work and it has to be consistent. It has to be on the calendar. Time has to be made. And I can't remember the quote I just read, but the best fertilizer is a farmer's shadow. I got it on the, have you seen Rory Groves Durable Trades? Have you seen his work?
No, but I'm writing it down now.
Yeah. I just had him on a couple episodes ago, but he does an actual paper newsletter. They're in Minnesota and they mail it out. We signed up for it and got the, I think it might be monthly, maybe it's quarterly, but literally the quotes in there were like, man, they curated it's agriculture. They have a homestead. They do sheep is their primary thing.
Yep.
But his book Durable Trades is essentially on the about 100 vocations that have stood the test of time that are family based. Wow. And, that was one of the quotes in his most recent newsletter. And I was just like, man, I gotta be there. Gotta be over the top of, what's going on. And if I'm not, I mean, we have 50, Cornish cross chicks and I didn't go down and check. I think it was just one day. And there were three dead ones in there. The way that they spilled the water. There was a little bit puddled at one end of the brooder. And it was just like, and that, hurts even as a grown man. Say, I didn't steward this properly.
Right.
I missed a check-in. Or you start to even just with our family, we're having to communicate, hey, who's shutting everybody up tonight?
Yep.
And you're not checking 70% of the animals, you're checking every single 100%. Pen, you're checking every door. We recently just had something come in and we're down seven chickens, it was one door left open, and that
That's
was
all it takes.
And
all it takes is one bad mistake. And we have that conversation at the dinner table, guys, it takes 50 years to build a beautiful life and five minutes to blow it up.
Yeah. Amen.
So it's one mistake. It's one little, I got sloppy. I got lazy. I let the enemy sneak up on me. I mailed it in for a day and it costs. So like talking, what I love about the land and the animals on the land is that God's creation gives us a chance to say the things we need to say to our children and to teach them what they need to know for life. And every single day there's a lesson. Every single day there's a moment. Every single day there's an interaction if you'll have eyes to see it. And Wendell Berry, the great Kentucky poet, farmer, essayist says, for whoever you are, whatever your life looks like, every day have some bit of life to tend to, something that is depending on you to continue living. And so if that's chickens, if that's a garden, if that's plants, if whatever that thing is, have something that keeps you sharp and keeps you responsible and keeps you on your front foot. And I'll just say to your earlier question, I didn't really get there, but it occurs to me now, because we share the land with people, when we travel, they take care of it. And when they travel, we take care of it. And the bartering, the back and forth, the camaraderie, the help, the communal, everyone chipping in thing, it's a really satisfying way to live. And then also, you know, the other night, my brother-in-law was out fixing fences and I jumped out there with him and he was weighing cattle and I had jumped out there with him and my kids are, it's just good to teach them how to help when someone is in need. So I'm riffing here, but I love what, I love what you're doing. And
I think the, my favorite line in the book was, and I may be getting it a little bit wrong, but if church isn't inconveniencing you, you're probably doing,
you're doing it wrong.
And I think that it's easy. I don't know if it's a man problem to, for grass is greener, to cut and run, to, you know, conveniently find a, find some marginal doctrinal error that now is the make or break for, we got to find another church, you know, the transient nature of things that you all, you speak about to the book. That's just, you know, I think that there's times where it feels like you just want to kind of leave. You want to go just, it's everybody else. It's not me, you know? And so I think that that just realizing that if you're in, and you know, I've talked about just go all in where you are, and just that mindset. I don't know if you've seen the This Is Where You Belong, the book. I can't remember what the author is, but I just recently finished. Kind of the same vein, just that mental choice. This is where I'm going to be, and this is it, and just kind of eliminates. I mean, I would equate it to something like if you think it's okay to get divorced and just find another woman, then you've already opened the door. So if you treat, I tell people try to treat church kind of like a marriage, you know, the same deal, the commitment, the, and so I loved everything that you said in the book about that. It was just like, this is a time, to kind of rekindle that, that generational thing, you know, and it combined with the farm too, like this multi-generational thing that you guys have kind of fallen in on with another family. So how that does your brother-in-law and sister go to your church as well? So you guys families. Are all three. Okay. And how many, how big is your church and what's the kind of breakdown? And
so our church is 38 years old. I'm the associate senior pastor. Our senior pastor is Brady Boyd. He's been here 15 years. I've been here 17. We are a church of about 14,000.
Wow.
And we have eight congregations and they're all around town and they're all live preaching. So when you hear eight congregations, a lot of times people think like simulcast. These are all local churches with their own pastoral team, live preaching. So we have the strength of the whole. I mean, we are a large church. God has blessed us and we're unapologetic about that, but they're micro congregations. Where people can be known. So at our Friday night congregation that I lead, where these other two families go, we have about 700 to 800 there on a every night. And in the orbit, about 13, 14, 1500 people in the orbit of who might come on any given week. So, yeah, I mean, that's a room where you can be known a lot. For a lot of you listening, that's like a big, whoa, that's a mega church. But you'd be surprised what the goal is. Not to know everybody. The goal is to create an environment where everyone can be known.
Yep.
And that's what
you have got. Within that 700-800, is there smaller groups too that that are like, how do you guys break that out?
Yeah, we've got table groups, community groups, people gathering in homes all across town. Some people will get together based on like affiliations or desires or hobbies. You know, we live in the Rocky Mountains. We got people who love to climb.
Yeah.
And so they get, that's their group. That's their small group. And they study the scriptures and they have meals together, and then they go hit the mountains on the weekend and play hard. And so there's that. There's,
and you would seem like by the book that, because I'm former military, reading between the lines, seems like you got a good military contingent
in your
congregation too. Because the way you qualified, hey, you have to move sometimes. Yep. Your job, I'm like, this guy's got a decent amount of military that he ministers to as well.
Colorado Springs has more military installations than any city in America, and 33% of our city turns over every 3 years.
Wow.
So crazy. Transient community, we are at the top of the list. So this book, thank you for bringing that up. This book does not romanticize place. It's not, you know, everyone can just settle down and be where that's not how everyone gets to live. But even if you have to move, there are ways of living rooted. There are ways of investing. You've done this, Nathan, as you've bounced around the globe. People who do it well are people who say, let's plug in, let's get our kids involved in school and in sports, and let's go to church, and let's invite people over, let's make friends, because you can be living on a clock.
Yep.
And some people go, yeah, we're leaving in 2 years, it's not worth it. And I would just encourage you to rethink that. It is worth pressing in.
Yeah, we had a military family that moved here just recently, and they, you know, came a couple times and said, we're joining, and have had three or four families out multiple times, you know, and you get the yield back quicker. I mean, they're tilling the soil faster. They're putting the seeds in the ground immediately. Mm-hmm. And it's just super encouraging to kind of watch exactly what you prescribe. Like, don't delay the decision. Don't kind of just say, oh, we're biding our time, but go deep as fast as you can, you know, and I'm watching it happen in our own congregation with families, and it's really cool to watch it play out. I have the luxury at this point to say we're settling down, and we're, you know, God willing, are going to be here forever. But yeah, I mean, I think that was sound advice, and I'm watching. I've seen the full spectrum, as I'm sure you are, you know. Say you can stay out aloof, you can kind of show up irregularly. You can hide out where you want to, but you're not gonna get it back, because you're not giving. You're not, like, even just the same thing. You're not jumping in and tending a fence when it needs to be done.
The same routines that keep animals alive, the same routines you described, the dailiness of it, are the same routines that keep our relationships alive and keep our families thriving in local communities.
Yeah.
If you're in every 6 weeks or so, don't expect a return. Like, church for you at that point then is just kind of a individual devotional, you and Jesus checking in, and then you're out the door.
Yeah.
But if you want to have the thick social capital community of the people of God, it just requires holy rhythms and routines of just showing up and putting yourself in those spots. And if you do it, you'll look up 3, 5, 10 years later, and your kids will have extended aunties and uncles. You will have people that will take care of you when the bottom falls out. And then 5 years later, you'll take care of them when the bottom falls out. And it's that cyclical back and forth mutuality within the body of Christ that I think really makes us rich.
Yep. So how do you, speaking of rhythms, kind of how are you proactive, you and your wife proactive with family rhythms, and how do you, what are your practices for that? I know you have the morning walks, it looks like, pretty regularly based on the Instagram.
Every day, every day, morning and evening walks. If we don't get that, something feels wrong. And
so 14 walks a week. Pretty much.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You and your wife, the kids come along?
Often yeah. They will. And sometimes we'll just make them. Other times, you know, they'll be in school and it'll be our Sabbath and I'll be at home and it'll just be the two of us. But we're outside all the time. It's the best thing we do. And it feels strange if we don't get it in during the day. It feels like we missed something. We're not right.
Do you have a script or some kind of rhythm within that rhythm? Is there kind of a, hey, we're trying to hit these things, or is it just we're together and what happens comes to the surface?
Exactly. Just like that. There's not a punch list. But yeah, I think there might be regular thing. To me, it's the best thing that happens is you get your body moving and then your heart starts opening up. Mm. And a lot of times social psychologists will talk about looking into the fire together. Mm-hmm. So like, think about sitting around a campfire. Why do we sit around campfires and just start talking? Mm-hmm. Because we don't have to make eye contact all of the time. Mm. You're looking into the fire together and something in you relaxes to be able to share and to be vulnerable. It's a shared experience, but we don't have to like be intense, you know. So we're Lisa and I are shoulder to shoulder on the walks. Our kids are with us. And something happens, this shared experience, your heart opens up and you begin to, one of the prompts that we have at dinner is high and low and ha. So tell me your high from the day. What was the high moment, the great memory, the low moment? What was the moment that made you sad or scared you or made you angry? And then ha, what's a moment that made you laugh? So high, low, ha, like putting that prompt in front of our kids every night at the dinner table, you'd be shocked at the conversations that open up just based on that prompt. Mm-hmm. So we'll, highs and lows, you know, so that's something we talk through. But sometimes it's just, I don't want to talk. I need to not talk. I need to hear the birds. Mm. I need to see the animals. I need my body to, I need to walk out the day and get it out of my system. So there'll be times where Lisa will look me in the eyes and she'll know it's going to be a chill, quiet walk. Other times I'm going to be chatty. Other times she's going to draw it out of me. But that's the dance of intimacy that you learn over the decades.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So any other rhythms that are, you mentioned meals. So is it sit down dinner pretty much happening?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, our kids are very involved with club sports, and so we're busy there. So one of the rhythms is, because we're busy during the year, we take June and July off, and we take November and December off. Okay. And we tell our coaches, you will not see any growthy kids in June and July or November and December. We got to get our family back. We got to get our bodies back. We got to get our calendars back. And so our kids know that in the next week, we're descending into a quiet, leisurely, relaxing summer. And we're going to be home together a lot. And so we're all excited for that. So that's like a yearly rhythm.
That's a significant amount of time to be pulled close. I mean, 4 months will go by pretty quick when you're moving. Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. So you're in, and then you have a good chunk at the end of each, you know, that you're settling down.
Yep. So yearly rhythms matter. And I would encourage you to not just plan your weeks, not just plan your months, but look at the big picture. And Lisa and I go every January. We take a couple days together and we pull out the global family calendar and all the trips and the tournaments and big church movements. Okay, we got Easter here. We got baptisms there. Oh, we've got Good Friday there. We've got Christmas Eve there. We've got Thanksgiving week here. So we're putting it all on the paper and we can begin to see from a 35,000 foot view what our year's going to look like, which means we'll notice the spots that we need to recover. Mm-hmm. So last week, Lisa and I went to Cabo for 4 days. And it was We had Good Friday, we had Easter, we had baptisms the next week. I had a week working on my doctorate out in Michigan. So I was at seminary for a week and then another big intense stretch. And then we knew that a week after all of that, that 4 week block, we needed to go away because we were going to be tanked. If we didn't plan that, we would get to this moment and we'd be falling apart. But over the years, we've learned the importance of the yearly calendar. So that is a rhythm for us that really is important so that it we can stay afloat, we can stay vibrant, we can stay alive. So there's the daily rhythms of the chores you've already covered and I've covered some. Weekly rhythms of church. We have a monthly rhythm of a ranch dinner with all three families. So we're going to have 12 meals. Like, tell me what other family you're going to have 12 meals with this year. 12 meals will go a long way, but it won't happen accidentally. It will not happen accidentally. So everyone bought in. We go the first Sunday of the month or whatever our rhythm is. And we rotate homes. So it's a shared burden. No one has to carry the whole thing. And it's one of the best things we do. So think That's amazing. Weekly, monthly, quarterly, yearly. What do we need to do to be living whole and full lives?
Yeah. And that, I mean, even just doing it at the beginning, because it can be so intimidating to block it out because you can kind of think, well, I want to leave it open because I don't know what's, I don't know what May is going to be like, you know, like, and even it just, even with a haircut, you know, like I finally just started booking them the same Wednesday.
I love it.
You know, and it's because you just get, oh, if I don't do that, then my wife's telling me I look really shaggy and I need to take care of it, you know? So it's just, I love the proactiveness of that. And so you have a barn too.
Yeah.
That I was drooling over too. You get pretty well, you got some cornhole going on, you got basketball. That's on your part of the land.
We built that last year,
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. And what's that? How's that get used primarily? What was the vision for that?
A place to gather people. We love having people over. We want to be hospitable. We want our land. We got to name the street because it was just an old patch of dirt from the 1930s that a family owned it. And so the county called us and said, what do you want to name your street? We called it Quiet Waters Point. And we named the ranch Quiet Waters Ranch with the creek going through it. We want people, Psalm 23, we want people to come out of here, come out to our place and go, whoa, like I got my soul back and he leads me beside quiet waters. And so with that, we want to gather people. We want to have missionaries that are furloughing, come out and be refreshed. Pastors retreats, be refreshed. Weddings, come out and celebrate out here. Dinners. So we've got 30 people coming over tomorrow night for a dinner and they're going to have their way at the barn and clean it up when they leave and they're going to have a party. It's going to be great. And we just want to create a place where people can build those memories.
And how about how far is that from the house? Like layout wise, the
it's 150 yards from the front door.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can people can use it. And you guys can be in the house. It's not disruptive, but it's proximal enough that you can skip down there and handle something or
sit on the couch drinking morning coffee and watch the boys shoot hoops. Yeah. So it's like we're watching it, but it's far enough away where you can have privacy too.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
It's pretty cool how the bus is parked under the barn right now, but long term. That's why we didn't feel like it was a waste is we'll pull the bus out of there and that becomes the gathering spot that allows you to, it's designed for hospitality. It's set up to be, you know, if people spill stuff, if it's what, you know, it's just, hey, take the blower or the hose out, we can hose everything down. It'll be all right. And, I think that, you know, I'm looking forward to getting to the phase where we can use that, right and now they got to use the bus bathroom. So
I'll tell you, you're going to use it a lot. And, and it's, I think the Lord is looking for more people who will be willing to open up hospitable spaces to refamily the world. The world is a lonely place. you can be in a crowd and you can feel completely lost and alone. And I think what our call as Christians is, if you're a Christian listening, I think our call is to refamily the world and to set the table and open the doors and to kill the fattened calf and to break bread and to pour the wine like Jesus did for us, to do that for the world. I think that's what we've been commissioned to do. So you got the barn, you've got the bus, you've got the home, you've got the land, you've got the chicken coop, like all these little spaces that can be particular places of encounter with the Lord. And just get ready, dude, your phone's going to ring.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's exciting. What, how do you do the food? What, who's the resident, foodie?
The family hosting will do the food for the dinner. Okay. So yeah, you're talking about in the barn.
Yeah. I guess what, when you set the table, or when your family is intentional about setting the table, what are the things that you're, and is some of it coming from the land there?
Yes.
You guys,
there's rarely a meal that we sit down to where we don't bring something to the table that we raised, that we can tell the story of. Yeah. And that is deeply gratifying. And again, that's a family thing, a value moment where we're able to sit down. And when we pray, we say, God, thank you. And the kids know the cows that they, you know, or the pigs, and God, thank you for this one. And you give us the fruit of the earth, and we thank you for your provision. And so there's that. I've got a Traeger that I like to use, and we'll, you know, throw a 15-pound brisket on, or a pork butt or something. And then it just depends on the gathering. If someone's doing a wedding, we'll let them sort out their own food. But if we're doing one of our monthly family dinners that rotate around the ranch, the family that's hosting will feed. And then sometimes we'll say, hey, we're opening up the barn tonight and we're going to be out there eating our meal. The kids will be playing outside. It's going to be a beautiful summer night. You're welcome to come and go as you please. Bring your own meal and come sit with us. And so letting other people contribute and their kids go play with our kids. And that's a way to not be
overwhelmed. Just provide the place.
Exactly.
And you guys can come and bring what, if you want to come hungry and bring food, whatever. Yep. It just, we'll provide the spot on the ground.
We'll be outside playing if you want to join us. And so that's a way of keeping it simple where you're not overwhelmed constantly.
Awesome. So may we have a little bit of time left. I'd like you to talk maybe specifically to through that kind of phase where you felt like grass is greener. You were excited about, you talk about it in the book.
Yeah.
You know, talk through men, you know, that may be disgruntled, not with the church, not with their family, but vocationally, kind of where they are at, and give us some principles or some wisdom as you've kind of sorted that out in your life.
Yeah, I would say I'm 39. How old are you, Nathan?
38. Be 39 next week.
So yeah, man, this is the season of life where we're building. And we're coming into our years of strength. I think 40 to 60 are the two decades where, you know, maybe 40 to 55, and 55 to 65, you transition into a different mode. But bottom line is, at this moment, you feel the responsibility to build, to contribute, to go for it, to leave it all out on the field, to make your mark. And that's a God-given thing. The question is, how do we make our mark, and what mark are we trying to make? Because a lot of guys are out there right now trying to knock it down, and they think making their mark is making as much money as they can in these years, and they're leaving their family behind. That's not making your mark. That's making the wrong mark.
Yep.
And so it's not a question of contribution. Of course we should contribute, and of course we should go for it, but we should ask how. How will I make the greatest contribution? And Lisa and I, the best gift we will give to the world is our three kids. No question about it. And I will not subcontract out their development to other people while I go, quote unquote, make my mark. Mm-hmm. They are my mark. Mm-hmm. The congregation I have in front of me, that's my mark. And read through Luke chapter 3 and 4, Jesus being tempted by the devil with the three temptations, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Mm-hmm. And just meditate on that for a month. Take a month and just bed down in that text. And I think you'll come out of it seeing that the enemy wants to dangle these carrots in front of us that, hey, I'll give you power and I'll give you all the kingdoms. And if you'll just take a shortcut here, if you'll just bow down to me, if you'll just kind of try to do something spectacular, throw yourself off, you know, for he gives his angels charge over you. The enemy's trying to get us to make the wrong kind of mark. And Jesus stays faithful to his Father and makes the right kind of mark. And so for me, it's a question of the smallest concentric circle being my greatest investment with my wife and my three children and the crew right around me. That is the smallest space, and it's the place that I've got to give the greatest investment. And then outward, we've got these graduating concentric rings. And my congregation, God's going to ask me about that one day. But there's a lot of things that God is not going to ask me about. And he's not going to ask me about how many people follow me on social media. He's not going to ask me about how much money I made. He's not going to ask me about, well, he might ask me what I did with my money. I believe he'll do that. But he'll not. He's not going to be blown away by big dollars. He's going to be blown away by a pure heart and a generous spirit. So to me, what would I say to those who are being sort of lured away to go chase the wrong thing? I would say, do the hard work of asking, what is my greatest contribution to the world? And where does the majority of my time need to go? And what kind of life do I want to build? Start asking those elemental questions and then answering those questions will cross off of the list a bunch of these different options. I don't care about the square footage of the home I live. I don't care about lots of things, but I do care about the quality of the investment with my most important people, because I think Jesus is going to really care about that. So long story short, interrogate your values. Ask yourself the question, what kind of life do I want to build? And what would true riches look like? And if you can start answering those questions, then you've got yourself pointed in the right direction.
Awesome. How are you personally, what are your ways that you're sowing into your growth spiritually, mentally? I mean, the physical aspect and getting out and walking is, I'm sure, huge. But what are kind of some personal practices that you you do to take care of yourself and your mind? And
exercise, walk, read, pray, be outside, outside. Anonymity, trying to fight for anonymity. So my work, a lot of it is public work. I'm with a congregation. I'm out and about. I'm with people all the time. One of the great disciplines for me is going away where nobody else is and being quiet and being restored. Now, you can't get a ton of that time, but every day, can you get a chunk? You read Jesus, you know, climbing up into the trees to retreat. You taking naps on the back of the boat, like finding ways of just shutting it down and turning off the phone, getting away from work, letting your mind tip over into a different space because you've given yourself that kind of distance from it. And then having people who are friends that are not enamored of my work or my role. Just people who don't care, people who love me, but they don't care what I do. They're not fanboy. Like, you need people who are interesting, who have plenty to talk about, who have perfected their craft, who's, they don't need to do the same work that you do, but they just need to be excellent at their work. And their excellence will inspire excellence in you. Like, mm-hmm. I watch what you do and I think, dude, this guy is world class in these various ways. And it makes me want to be world class at the thing God has called me to do. Mm-hmm. So you got to have good brothers around you that are interesting and they're excellent and they're focused. Mm-hmm. And I think if you tease that out, if you build that kind of life around you, hopefully we'll be able to make it over the long haul. Mm-hmm.
Well, tell our listeners how they can best kind of follow along. We mentioned Instagram, but mm-hmm. how can they kind of support what's going on with you and stay in the loop on what God's doing with you and continue to learn from what you're doing?
Well, thank you, Nathan, for asking. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Mr. Daniel Grothe, M-R Daniel, G-R-O-T-H-E. You can pick up, I've got two books. The Power of Place is the one we've been talking about here, Choosing Stability in a Rootless Age. Another one called Chasing Wisdom, documenting my 10-year kind of apprenticeship with Eugene Peterson. So those are different resources, newlifechurch.org. Or just come out to Colorado Springs and I'll buy you a burger. So come find me.
Heck yeah. Almost, my goal, with the podcast has been to try to do as many in person. Mm-hmm. You sent me that screenshot of your calendar. I know you had a meeting in your office. I'm like, man, I wonder if I just kind of knocked on his door and like, I know you're in this. I gotta be careful that I don't go into the weirdo mode when I'm seeking come anytime, interviews. Man. Yeah.
Send me some dates. We'd love to see you out here.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me on the podcast today, Nathan. You're doing really good work.
I hope the soccer game is a victory this evening. Thank you. I'll look forward to seeing that update on Instagram. I appreciate your time and your work, and God bless you and your family.
Bless you too.
Have a good one.
You too.
How about that interview, y'all? Practical. I've already tried to institute a regular morning, evening walk with family and my wife. Not quite there to every day with my wife, but definitely 5 to 8 times a week, whether morning or evening with the kids, without walking our farm. And I'm telling you, it really makes a difference. Your mindset to get outside, get unplugged, and even just be with those that you love. Check out his book, as we mentioned before, The Power of Place, Choosing Stability in a Rootless Age. And also, he is pretty active on social media, most notably Instagram, Mr. Daniel Grothe, spelled G-R-O-T-H-E. Check him out on Instagram. Get yourself a copy of The Power of Place. And as always, share this episode with someone, just one person, that needs to hear this message. And as always, have a good one.